Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Of course, that is Rude Boy, the Wailers, again celebrating the life of Carlton Barrett, passed away on this day, the great reggae drummer, one of the great originators of many of our percussion sounds that came into through reggae music, Rude Boy. We are now about to enter this conversation. It's been in the news a bit over the last 2 weeks, covered by The Sun and the Baltimore Brew, of course, did extensive work on this around the question bill questioning where whether or not they should have money to work in their incarceration, their reentry program in the Oliver community. And the mayor made her announcements about it as well, and we caught the city yesterday. And we're joined now by Gerald Grimes, who is project manager at the Reentry Center at the Northwest Center at Northwest One Stop Career. And Gerald Grimes, welcome. Good to have you on the show with us.
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages, of course, and tweet me at Mark Steiner with your thoughts on reentry and this and all the things you've been reading in the paper. It was very clear. Let me say this question. If you can't answer this question, Joe, we'll go on to ones that you can. But let me just start this way. When the mayor said that the mayor, I think the quote was the information going out that they're putting out there that I'm not supporting individuals in the community that had priorly been incarcerated is just not consistent with the facts. She says, my budget reflects it. My history of the community reflects it. The number of people we've been able to connect with reflects it. This is a quote I'm reading from the Baltimore Brew in her take. So talk a bit about that. When the mayor says we're doing all this stuff, what is the city saying it's doing?
Okay, well, let me try this because I run a one-stop career center here in Mondawmin. And any citizen can come to the One Stop and get employment and training assistance. Back in 2005, reentry really started here. We did something very innovative that wasn't happening anywhere else in the country. We actually specialized in helping folks who had criminal background issues in our One Stop. We actually specialize in helping folks with criminal background issues to get jobs. When we opened in 2005, up until today, we've had 32,000 ex-offenders visit us for services, and we've gotten over 3,000 of them employed. So we've been doing a lot of work for a long time in reentry. We pride ourselves on our partnerships. We're not the only game in town doing this. We have a lot of partnerships and collaborations. Of course, if you're going to have a one-stop, you're going to have the experts doing what the experts do. So we have co-located partners who are here to help with the barrier removal for the folks who come home from prisons so that we can not only get them employed, but to help them mitigate some of the other problems that they're having that's going to keep them employed and help them advance on their jobs.
So, and it's a very tough problem, I know this, but you mentioned the people coming in. I mean, what percentage of people actually end up with full-time employment, and what kind of jobs are they getting?
Well, jobs are based upon what skills and abilities you bring to the table. That's not a cut-and-dry answer there. If you have a skilled trade, you're going to be employed in the skilled trades, you know, that sort of thing. So the types of jobs run the gamut. We get everything from construction to warehousing to trucking, you know, those sorts of jobs, IT jobs. I mean, it runs the whole gamut. But the problem is that there, first of all, is a stigma that we have to overcome. We have to work with the employer community to help overcome those stigmas. We are actually intermediaries with employers for folks coming home. We help folks get skilled up, and that's the biggest thing that I see. We need to help folks get skilled up. job search is different than it used to be 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Employers aren't saying, hand me a resume. They're saying, upload your resume. Technology has changed the way we even look for jobs. So folks coming out of prisons, we have to help get them skilled up just to look for jobs. We actually call it 21st century job search. So we get them the computer skills, teach them how to cut and paste their applications and resumes, how to do online assessments, those sorts of things, in preparation for getting jobs. But there are employers out here who are hiring. We have had some wonderful success this fiscal year. We've got over 200 job placements so far this year, and we're doing well. So it runs the gamut.
So one of the things, Gerald, I just put, as thinking about this, I mean, a couple of things I want to throw out here and ask you, three things actually in particular before you have to roll. The whole question around build, you probably politically cannot answer that question. You're not the mayor and you're not the deputy mayor, but is there a reason why some of the money in the programs are not going to community groups? There's so many community groups that struggle every day that have incredible success records with getting people back into society from prison, getting them in community, getting them into work, and partnering with unions like Build is partnering with the Painters Union. Why some of that's not farmed out to some of these community organizations that seem to be very successful on their small scale work with people?
Well, I'm not going to comment on that political question, Mark, but I will say that everybody is struggling with funding. I'm struggling with funding. My shop here to continue the reentry center, I rely on funding from the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. I rely on funding from the Department of Labor License and Regulation, mayor's funding. We even had philanthropic money in here from Abel and Weinberg at some points. Everybody struggles with funding, and there's just not enough to go around. The Second Chance Act puts out a lot of funding measures that folks can go through, but we've learned to collaborate. Because everybody has different focuses for their organizations. And so we've learned to collaborate so that we can get a better bang for the buck. So I will say that there's a need for funding all the way around, but I don't want to answer that political question as you posed it to me. That's not my purview.
Okay, I understand. I had to ask the question. I didn't think you could answer, but I thought I'd ask it anyway. I think if you look at the last report from the Maryland State Department of Corrections, there are approximately 6,800, probably more, people coming home from prison to Baltimore in the last 2010 annual report that I saw that I was referred to. And there has not been a report at least for 2011 or 12 or 13, so we don't have those numbers. But these are numbers from 2010. So clearly, there's a limit to what the city can do. So that's why I guess there should be only one city-run reentry center to help all these people trying to find jobs and careers. Because, I mean, it's a huge thing. We're talking about we have the kind of the high one of the highest percentages in the nation of people returning to per capita returning from prison system, and people who are really trying to go straight but have a hard time going straight because it's impossible for just your center to do it. Or any kind of city agency to do it?
Well, that's why I talked about collaborations and partnerships. We have a number of partners, Jericho Program, Living Classrooms Program, Center for Urban Family, Strive Program. There are a lot of organizations who are in reentry, and as a matter of fact, Baltimore is one of the most progressive cities in terms of reentry in the country. We have a lot of collaboration going. There are a lot of organizations out there that are doing a lot of good work. Not only our city, but our state is also a part of this. We have the Maryland Reentry Initiative, which helps us with our federal bonding program. But we put together these partnerships and collaborations because you're right. You're absolutely right. The problem is huge. The problem is big. And so what we're trying to do is to make sure that we can let the experts do what the experts do, because a lot of this is about barrier removal. I mean, labor exchange, getting somebody employed is one thing. But if somebody doesn't have transportation to get to work, for instance, they're going to lose it.
So tell me, I mean, there are a lot of people coming out of prison and who have been out and haven't been able to find jobs for years because of their records, and they don't have any 21st century skills. So, I mean, what happens when a person walks into reentry center? I mean, what are the specific things you can really help them with? I mean, how does that work? And I know that they have classes on maybe how to get the records expunged and that, write resumes and use computers. But what else? I mean, what are specific things to help people get jobs?
Well, again, I have a person here, we call him a business services rep. He's a BSR. His job is to go out and talk with employers and find out what those employers need in terms of a workforce, bring that information back, and then we screen our folks for those jobs. He also does advocacy for the ex-offender population. He also educates educates employers, for instance, their new EEOC guidelines that say you can't have a blanket prohibition on hiring the ex-offender population. So we get folks in here, and if folks don't have particular skills, we help get them trained for particular skills. That's how folks get their CDL licenses when they come here. They get GNA, CNA licenses, surgical tech, that sort of thing. So we do training also. It's not just employment. We have to prepare folks for the labor force. And we do a lot of that, barrier removal and preparation.
So we've also heard, this is anecdotal, and you can comment on this if you'd like, but I mean that from various people who have talked about these programs, that the rules and regulations governing the programs run by the city are pretty strict. And if a person, no matter what the excuse is late, misses a day because something might have happened, that they're dropped from the program.
That is not my take at all. First and foremost, folks can come here every day. We give people computer access so that they can do their job search every day. There's no dropping from a program. Now, if you're in a training program, for instance, and you no call, no show, yeah, you might be dropped from a training program or things like that. But to come in and have us help you find employment, there is no rule and regulation like that. I don't even know where that came from.
It came from stories of people who had been part, maybe they were part of training programs. We'll investigate this a bit more, but that people, one gentleman's story was he was mugged and on the way to work and hurt, but then he couldn't get there, and so when he got there, I told him he was dropped out of the program. Okay, what's your excuses? Those kind of things. And people who, you know, come out of prison have very difficult times kind of pulling themselves together sometimes, plus living in conditions where things like that happen. That's why I asked that question.
Yeah, and we understand that, and that's why we advocate for that kind of thing. We're in the helping profession, not the hindering profession. And we try our very, very best to help folks move along as best as possible. But I'll tell you, you know, because as manager of this career center, mm-hmm. I'm the one who gets the complaints. And I will tell you that there are folks who come in, and if you don't hand them a job, all of a sudden you did something wrong, no matter what, how good your service is. Because they're looking for something specific. They're looking for you to hand them a job. Other folks come in and say, well, when I went to the career center, all they did was set me in front of a computer. Well, we didn't just sit you in front of a computer. We gave you to where the job orders are so that you can search those job orders and come up with some suitable employment, that sort of thing. So those are the kinds of things in terms of service that I hear complaints about. But never do we turn people away. As a matter of fact, the reentry center will take anybody who has any kind of criminal background, no matter what jurisdiction you come from. We have people coming from as far west as Hagerstown down here because there are few reentry services there, and we have folks coming up from right. PG County and that sort of thing. So we're helping folks. That's not an issue.
And I'm sure you are. And Joe Grimes, this what we talked about today as project manager at the Reentry Center for the Northwest Center at the Northwest One Stop Career, I will say that folks that I know who take this job as public service, as you have done, are trying to do the best they can. So anything that sounded like a push wasn't against you. It was just pushing the idea where the system is and what's going on, because I know how dedicated guys like you are in our community to try to do best by the people. So I just want to make that clear as well.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Joe Grimes, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
We are going to take a very quick break and meet the folks from Build to hear their side of what's going on and what this is all about. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Stein, and we're about to talk to the folks from Build in this controversy. But let me remind you on the way to that conversation that tonight at the Forest Park Senior Center at 4801 Liberty Heights Avenue, up just north of Liberty Heights in Gwinoak, the Baltimore City NAACP and Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Rho Psi Omega Chapter, will host the 2014 Democratic Gubernatorial Candidate Forum. Anthony McCarthy is hosting and moderating that gubernatorial panel tonight. Starts at 6 p.m., so join them there, and you can get your questions, I think, asked. Just write them on cards. That's happening tonight. So I do not want to miss that, and I'm going to try to stop by myself and see how my brother Anthony is doing and how they are doing up there. Here we are with the folks from Build. Ojeda Hall is in the studio. She's been on the show before. She's the lead organizer for Build. Good to see you again, Ojeda.
Good morning.
Always. Melvin Wilson, coordinator of the Baltimore Citywide Jobs Team.
Good morning.
And Dominic Raby.
Yes.
Is it Raby or Rabby?
Raby.
Gotcha. Make sure I have that right. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Member of the Build Association of Unemployed Men Ready to Work. Good to have you here.
Good to have you.
Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So clearly Gerald Grimes, who came on the program a moment ago, was not in a position to answer what the Americans say. His job was to help as many people as he can. I do believe that Gerald Grimes and other men and women like him do the best they can to help our people. They wouldn't take city jobs to do that and be public servants if they didn't. I really do believe that, having done that myself in my past life. But the reality is we have this huge number of people, 6,800, 7,000, what that number is, of people coming back from prison every year to the city of Baltimore. And it's a huge, huge issue for the future of our city. You know, we think about all the time building Harbor Point and all these other places. Well, that's fine, but there are people who live here that are trying to make the city better as well from a different level. So what's the heart of this, Ojeda? What is the heart of the issue here? Was it just somebody came in from the city to talk to Build and made a promise the mayor couldn't fulfill because it wasn't her promise? I mean, what happened with this, what was it, $594,000 over a three-year period, not in a lump sum? And you raised $1.2 million yourself to help formerly incarcerated people in the Oliver community get jobs and create new lives. What's the background to this?
Well, let me say thank you for allowing us to be on the show. You know, there's no one face to unemployment in the city. And so Build undertook a listening campaign citywide. And I tell you, from Roland Park to some of our Jewish communities to our African-American communities, unequivocally the issue was jobs. We're amazed. I mean, there are families who have young people coming home from college, sitting on their sofas because they can't find jobs. We have people in our program, seniors, people with advanced degrees who can't find jobs. And then we have local communities like Oliver, where we're undertaking a partnership with the mayor's office to really clean up the area and to keep it safe and to attract new homeowners. In fact, we're contributing to the mayor's goal to bring 10,000 new families in to Oliver. Our housing developments have brought a third of them are people from outside of the city back into the city. So we really genuinely were talking about partnership, and we thought the natural next step was around jobs, that the way to keep the community secure and safe and to keep it growing and flourishing is to provide jobs for those who would otherwise do other things. And so with the best of intentions, working with our office, we designed a local solution with a local employer there who put skin in the game, willing to put skin in the game with us. and came to the mayor and said, we've got a good answer. So let's continue the productive partnership that we've had. And to our surprise, there's been no meeting, no negotiation. And then when her office and staff knew that we were going public about this, then we finally got a meeting, still no negotiation. And the answer was simply no. That was shocking to us. We think anytime a developer or an organization says we've organized $1 million, you at least have a meeting and we negotiate.
Well, I do want to talk about it in the context of developers who get these deals from Baltimore when they put up some money and the city puts up so much more, and why the same can't happen for a community group, even though it's maybe a different set of apples and oranges here, but I want to talk about that. So I don't know if this is the proper question to come to you with, Melvin Wilson, but I'll try. So what is different about the program that is happening on Oliver Street? I think it's 50 people. Do I have that right?
Yes.
How is that different than what the city's doing in terms of the reentry work? I mean, what makes it substantially different than what you'd be accomplishing?
Our proposal, Mark, is distinctly different because it has jobs attached to individuals. A lot of times, many people that come out of prison go through job training programs, but at the end of the day, there's no job. We have a job up front, and then we supply the supportive services to support these individuals so that not only they have the job, they also retain it. So the work is there. As the gentleman said from the city, there's 30,000 people they've met over the last 10 years. 27,000 of those people still aren't working, and that's troubling. So what are they doing as opposed to working? If these individuals have jobs, now they're tax-paying citizens and they're productive and they're not wreaking havoc on our neighborhoods.
And that is a real point here. And I was going to ask you a follow-up on this, Dominic. But let me, before I ask you a follow-up from what Melvin just said, tell us a bit about you.
Well, I'm 30 years old. 4 years ago, I was sentenced to 35 years for manslaughter and some handgun charges. 2012, my conviction was overturned. And I was given a new trial. 2013, I was found not guilty of all charges except for possession of a handgun. And I was just released January 30th.
So you were found not guilty of the manslaughter?
Yes.
But possession of a handgun?
Yes. And I was just released January 30th this year.
How many years did you do in prison?
4.
Was that your first time in?
No.
So tell me what your situation is. Just a little back. I don't know. I mean, that's because some of the finest people I know have gone through and come out again.
Yes.
So I mean that. So tell me about what it is you were saying at this place in Build about your own life and what you're asking for and what you're looking for.
Basically, you see, you got people that's like, they genuine, like they really care about finding us employment and keeping us employed. Like, when it's a turnaround Tuesdays at Zion that I go to, and they like help you with like resumes, being prepared when you go out on the interviews, and how to present yourself. So it's like you said, it's the program also, unlike other programs, is like training, like you're getting trained, and then you got a job while you're training. It's not as if I'm going to the career center, they training me, then I got to go out on my own and find a job. As an ex-offender, that'd be kind of hard for me. You got a lot of ex-offenders that have trees but can't get a job because of their record. Whereas though, this program is like you're going to get trained and you're going to get a job, and me being an ex-offender has nothing to do with it. Like, I'm guaranteed the employment.
So
can I jump in a little bit?
You may, OJ,
yeah,
of course.
Thank
no,
you.
No, you can't.
No.
We'll go show you push again.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason we were so excited to work with the mayor's office and the mayor's team was because Build is on the ground in this area and in other areas of the city. And so we're not a job training program. We weren't looking for a grant for a job training program. We're not looking to be certified to be a job training program.
They said something, you didn't pass a certification. That was one of the arguments the mayor's office made, right?
Correct, that we should go get certified. That's not what we're doing here. We were really hoping the staff and the mayor's team would be excited that there were organizations on the ground that were sitting one-to-one with leaders like Dominic, who are members coming back to society, trying to become members again, trying to be taxpaying citizens, that because of his relationship, his mother and grandmother's relationship at a place called Zion Baptist Church. It was very, you know, a member of Build for the last many years. The pastor has been co-chair of Build. That pastor, when he helped design along with Reverend Calvin Keene and the other clergy in the area helped design a local solution, that they were coming to the table saying, hey, we've been here before. We've sparked the Renaissance of Oliver. We're looking for, we sparked it with $1.2 million, you know, 10 years ago. We've brought another $1.2 million to the table. We're talking to leaders and members and participants like Dominic. Let's have a conversation about a really hard problem that we're willing to put some money in the game about with, you know. So I think we're very different. I think the mayor's team needs to get to know us again, I think, because we were not looking for a grant. Build in 37 years has never taken a government grant. That was, I'm not sure where they would have gotten that from, but if we had sat at the table, we would have been able to, I think, go into greater detail about what it was exactly that we were proposing. We're not, we've never taken a grant from the city for program for ourselves.
So that's important. Who's about, you about to say something?
I just want to say too, Mark, that these jobs that we're proposing are mostly in the construction field, and these will set these individuals up to be in the pipeline for school construction, for construction when the red line comes. So these individuals that have little to no skills at the end of this pilot program will be able to transition into meaningful, continued salaried employees where they can sustain their families and sustain our community.
So what I'm curious is, how does this thing work in terms of a guaranteed job before it starts? What unions are you working with? You're working with unions, right?
We're working with a developer in the Oliver community that's been building homes, that has redeveloped the whole Oliver community. A lot of these individuals live in Oliver, so they're building homes in their own community, and they're part of the community. So as Ojeda said, we're on the ground. We're talking to these individuals. We're talking to the homeowners. We're talking to the developers. It's just not a collaborative effort. We're partners with the community.
But didn't I read somewhere that you're collaborating with the Painters Union, other unions on this?
Right. So we've been in conversations about the Painters Union, I think, started in Baltimore originally. And so, you know, really want to come back, be on the ground, get people ready for some of the development opportunities that are happening in the city over the next 10 years. That's music to our ears. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, all that Melvin just said around the school construction coming in, perhaps stormwater infrastructure, perhaps Port of Baltimore, perhaps Redline. There are people thinking about this. They're really creative potential partners to the city, really thinking about how do we create a work ladder? And the Painters Union was one of those interesting conversations. So several conversations in, we thought.
So there's no deal with the Painters Union or other unions at this moment.
They would put in a portion of the overall $1.7 million.
The unions would.
Correct.
Gotcha. That's what I didn't, was unclear
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to take a very brief break and come right back. And I have some very specific questions for all of you here. And do want to come back with a question for Dominic Braby, because there's something Melvin Wilson said at the top of this conversation about what happens to people who can't find work and the scope of this problem in this community. Stay with us. We'll be right back at 410-319-8888. Please show us your thoughts about reentry. And we're going out once again with the Wailers, remembering the great drummer who passed away on this day, shot in front of his home. We'll be hearing his music a lot during the course of this hour, so please stay with us, Mr. Carlton. Give me a little soul, Lord, oh Lord. Give me a little soul, oh Lord. Rude boy, run. Rude boy, run. Rude boy, run. Rude boy, run.
Look at that. Here she comes.
Welcome back. Eddie Cochran died on this day in 1960. One of our great rock and rollers, Eddie Cochran, of course, one of his famous pieces, Something Else, we played for you on this day. And as you said earlier, this is also the day that Carlton Barrett was also blown away and murdered, one of the great drummers of all time, in 1987. And I was just saying to one of our guests here, Dominic Raby, who's a member of the Build and Association of Unemployed Ready to Work, who's in the studio with us, that he's wearing a Bob Marley t-shirt. It must have been channeling Bartlett put on, but he was put on this morning to walk into the studio. We are here with him and Ojeda Hall, who's lead organizer for Build, and Melvin Wilson, who's coordinator of Build's citywide jobs team. Numbers 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or tweet me at Mark Steiner. Bring us your thoughts. So there's a lot of things I want to try to ask you in the next 15 minutes before we have to go to break. So the first is, Dominic, you've been through the city program that we talked about.
Yes, the One Stop Center.
Tell me your experience.
Like, I was sent there through child support. They got a program there for people who are ridges up to try and maintain their license. So I went in, and I sat down with someone, and they, like, asked me what I wanted to do. So it was like, I said, warehousing. And he, like, put it in the computer, and he sent out a printout which had like three listings of three warehouse jobs that was hiring. And he gave me the time and the dates that I can go to the place to file the application and what bus route goes there. And that was like the end of it.
That was it?
Yes.
You went?
And like, I went, I filled out the applications, but like, I know I haven't heard anything from them. And then it's like, not like just me, like, my mother has a bachelor degree in education administration. Like, she was out of work for a year after she got out of the degree, and she went to the East Side one on Madison Street. And she was, like, saying, like, the same thing. Like basically, it's not really, like, a help. Like, if you got a computer in your home, you can do the same thing you do in the center. Like, there's nothing there that can say that you leave there and you, like, you feel good about, like, I really got a chance of getting a job for real. Like, I just don't feel.
So what's so different about what you do then?
And Melvin will say more. I mean, I think we can all agree that a job. Might be better than a job hub. And so we were proposing a job tied to the training in our best experience, training.
So you're saying that everybody who comes, the 50 people you're talking about, and we're talking about a small program, 50 people. That's not a condemnation. Saying I'm talking about the intensity of what that means.
Yes, yes.
Because small sometimes gets the job done rather than big.
Well, and right. If you put it in context, I mean, if the mayor's program has put about 200 to work this year, we're talking about, we were talking about 50 over 3 years. We're talking about 20 this year. So we would fully be a tenth of the number that's out there right now. And so we didn't think there was any one monolithic solution to the unemployment problem. It had to be a lot of little local solutions. And we had one. So that's what's been disappointing.
Melvin?
I think the difference, Marcus, as Dominic says, these guys and ladies, we have ladies as well, have been through job program after job program after job program. End of the day, there's no job. We're starting on the front end. The job is up front. That's a job. Most of the jobs will be in construction. And as the gentleman said from the city, these individuals do need supportive services. We're going to have the wraparound services.
What do you mean by supportive services? Services.
Case management. A lot of people are homeless. As Dominic said, child support issues, expungements. We have been at the table with representatives from each one of these organizations. Transportation, part of our model, we're going to transport people to parole and probation, bring them back to work. A lot of jobs, they go and they don't come back. And this is why a lot of the individuals lose their jobs. We're going to take them to child support. We're going to bring them back to work. So it's important that they have support so they can maintain these jobs and be supportive taxpaying citizens.
It's an interesting concept, and I'll just say this one thing. I mean, we do our work relationally, so by relationships. We didn't want people like Dominic, real great people, so with strong hearts and good souls, a leader, a member of our institution, a member of one of our local congregations. This was about relationship, not client.
And I guess, you know, when you think about these things, you think about the scope of the issue, the tens of thousands of people we're talking about who really need this kind of service. And I can think of it. I was talking to my producers about this morning. We were talking about the show and trying to get more people on the show. And they were saying, just do one step at a time. Let's get Bill on here. And we did. And the idea that there are many small groups in the city mm-hmm. that are working on reentry. They're doing really good work.
Yeah.
With 50 people, with 100 people, with 200 people, with women specifically, whatever that is, that are really kind of helping people turn around. Because, I mean, I think that, Dominic, one thing people don't get is that I think the vast majority of people who have done time really want to go straight, mm-hmm. really want to kind of work and live and not live the life of hustle and theft.
Nobody ever wants to go back to prison. So it's like, when you come home, you just like need the opportunity. Like, it's like now, like for me, like I'm home, and like I don't want, like I said, obviously I want to continue to be an ex offender. I don't want to become a repeat offender. And it's like a lot of times, like I feel like if I was to turn back to the streets, I don't believe I'd go back to prison. I believe the end result for me would be death. So
what do you mean?
I don't. Like, if I was to go back and start hustling or be in the streets again, I think I'd be killed in the streets. I don't see me going back to prison. I told many of people this many times, like I've been given a second chance. And I think, far as, like, prison-wise, I think that's, like, behind me. So I think the next result of me stepping back out there, it'd be death. Like, I think I wouldn't survive it again.
So are you working now?
No.
So what's blocking so you have this $1.2 million that was promised. So what's stopping the program from just moving ahead with that?
You know, we're meeting internally to revisit the proposal without the full funding of it. We will move forward and do less of what we had hoped to do.
Less means what? Less people can be served?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that
or
those
fewer people can be served, not less.
Fewer people. Right. And we'll meet with Dominic and other members of this association about what we realistically can do, which is deeply disappointing.
But to say that, we have actually already hired some individuals who are working already. When we met, as Ojeda said, we organized on the ground, and we went out on the corners and found out and asked people, did they want an alternative to work in the corners? And we had 44 people come to the initial meeting that were crying out for help. They want to get off the corners. They want to work. They want a meaningful – a lot of these individuals have children. They want their kids to look up to someone to aspire to know that their parents have an honest living. So it's there. The work is there. The people are there, and they want help.
You know, I think that it's important also to realize that we push this thing about everybody has to also go to college, and college is great, and I think college is a wonderful thing. But the bottom line is that you can still be a deeply spiritual and intellectual human being and understand things and be a painter and be a machinist and be whatever it is that puts that $17 an hour in your pocket.
Mark, listen, I'm chopping at the bit. I mean, I am the granddaughter of a Bethlehem Steel union man who had no college degree and raised six children on a union salary. My dad, City College grad, when I was born, couldn't go to college, went right to work and had a job where he was able to buy a home, raise a family. This is what we need in Baltimore, a real middle class, again, people who want to pay taxes, contribute to the tax base of the city, and get Baltimore moving again. We got to get Baltimore working.
We have to get Baltimore working. And I think the idea that you're in the center of a community like the Oliver community, which is where you're focusing your attention, that if you have working class and middle class coming back living together side by side in a community that's kind of rebuilt itself, that's part of it too, because we keep rebuilding communities and we get the people who live there and pushing them out so they're no longer there and bringing a whole other class of people without.
We cannot push people out.
People have to live beside each other.
That's right.
And with each other.
That's right. And we're doing it. We're trying to do more of it.
So this is, to me, kind of a very powerful piece of work you all are doing. And I do hope that soon Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake will join us here on the air so we can kind of talk about this in real terms, not in terms of an attack, but the question is just we have to think in different, more creative ways of how to bring our city and save our city. And maybe part of it is that there are many, as Bobby Marv Holmes in his latest film, and his one film that he's done, Live Baltimore. Live. Well, I'm just blocking the name of the film. It's terrible because I love this film. Live Youngblood, where we talk about what this city needs and things can be done by all these organizations doing work in small ways. Mm-hmm. Maybe 50 people, maybe 100 people, maybe 200 people. They're all over the city. They need the support and funding to really get this thing resolved.
Well, listen, we're talking about miracles, and I think we're in the miracle-making business. It's going to take collaboration. Let's put some collaborations together. And
final thought for our listeners, Dominic, from you before we take a break. Where do you think we need to go?
I just think, the mayor just needs to just, sit down with us and just, hear what we're saying for real. Like, I always say, I want my past to be my past, and I want a job to be my future.
Thank you, brother. Good to meet you, Dominic Raby.
Good to meet you, too.
Who is a member of the Build Association of Unemployed Ready to Work. Melvin Wilson, who is a coordinator of the Build Citywide Jobs Team. Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Mr.
Ojeda Hall, always lovely to meet you. Happy to see you here with us, the lead organizer for Build. Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about this incredible film, Girls in the Band. Don't go away.